It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Monson Show. I am Kim Monson. Thank you to each and every one of you for listening. You're each treasured, valued, you have purpose. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. You were made for this time. Thank you to this team that I get to work with. That's producer Steve and Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. I cannot believe that it is Thursday. It seems like it was just Monday a moment ago, Steve.
Happens every week. And hey, can I bug you something? I mean, this is
sure.
I hate to do this, but you're not in the studio, you're at home. Could you knock your phone down a notch, because you're really clobbering me here?
Absolutely. So let me just do that. Yeah, we've got this handy dandy rig. Does that help a little bit?
There you go.
Okay, fantastic. So be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Monson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thank you to all of you who support us. We are an independent voice. We search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. And it is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, coercion, or this latest one, which is this government-induced inflation, which is being induced by President Brandon and all of his very terrible policies, producer Steve.
President Brandon, wow, that's you're a little snarky today.
It's Thursday. Yes, it's a snarky day, I guess, today. So great show planned.
I still think, we have a different open each day, and that the Thursday open where you talk about, you know, giving these people the power to tell us what we're supposed to inject into our bodies. We need to tell everybody that was recorded long before we even knew the word COVID.
And absolutely.
I just think it's neat the way that kind of stuff works out.
Well, and it was really in response to a mom had reached out to me when there was this vaccine legislation down at the State House. And she said, you need to take a look at this. And I've always thought vaccines are a good idea. I vaccinated my kids and had always really liked that. However, when I looked at that piece of legislation and I saw all the force and coercion in that and realized that that legislation would give, as I mentioned, an unelected bureaucrat the power to dictate what we inject into our bodies. Steve, the thing about it is the radical activist left, they've been playing long ball. They have been at this for a long time. And so I thought, well, I've got to read the legislation that has given these bureaucrats all this power when we started down this whole reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan, China virus. And that piece of legislation at that particular point in time was 1,000 pages long. And they continue to add to it. And so we need to be electing people that's going to walk this back, producer Steve. These elections really do matter. And we have been kind of fat and happy thinking that we are electing people that have everyday, hardworking people, no matter what your descriptor is, our best interests in mind. And they have been passing stuff for years that have been ramped up to get to this point where unelected bureaucrats and these politicians and interested parties, and you can put big pharma in there, that they are now trying to dictate our lives. And so we're at a really defining moment, Steve, in our country.
Could I inject in a political, I'm sorry, an opinion here? When you say that they're playing long ball, the translation for that is they are nefarious enough and they are unscrupulous enough to go out there and think way down the road and, you know, basically pull the rug out from under the rest of us.
Well, and what is, yes, that's absolutely what has happened. And unfortunately, here in Colorado, Republicans have been complicit in this because they have not stood for principles. And many times they've not stood for principles because, and Prop 119, this new marijuana tax for the children, which failed, is an excellent example of that, because it was the left, the Gary Investment Group, that came in and initially funded that big time. But then we find out that a Republican operative is actually running the campaign, and one of his employees is the registered agent, and then a right-leaning group that says that they're for school choice came in with big money as well. And when we talked to Adam Andrzejewski with Open the Books, and I think that was on Election Day, I mentioned Prop 119 to him and what that was. It would put in place, again, it was supposedly this new marijuana tax for the children. But it, what it did is it put in place an unelected, unaccountable board of 9 members that are chosen by this governor. They would then choose their replacements. They had taxing powers. The authority could accept gifts. And as Adam mentioned, this is exactly what the left wants, is a permanent government. And it would be not accountable to anyone, not accountable to the voters, not accountable to the legislature, not accountable to the Board of Education. And unfortunately, Republicans were complicit in this as well. And fortunately, we were out there early. Patty wrote 4 really important op-eds. Rick Turnquist did. I did as well, and that was defeated. The Colorado voters are waking up, and I'm super excited about that, Producer Steve.
Well, the process you just described is probably the best explanation for... I've been around the state long enough to remember when it was solid red, and now it's, you know, it's purple, and it's on its way to blue.
I know it. It's really, really hard to believe. So, but we've got a great show planned for you today. Sean Spicer, you know him. He's on Newsmax. He was... former press person for President Trump, and he's written a new book, and it looks like it's going to be really, really hard hitting. And it's called Radical Nation: Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's Dangerous Plan for America. Karen Levine, great show sponsor of both the Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories, will be at the bottom of the hour to give us an update on what's happening in the metro real estate market. And then in the third and fourth segment, we'll be talking with a fiscal policy analyst with the Independence Institute, Ben Murray, about the proposed Colorado budget, what's in there. Really important. You know, people have said that they're not into politics, but they are finding out that politics is into you. And again, we are seeing people really wake up, Steve.
Yeah, and your bank account, too.
That's what they really want. Is what's unfortunate here in Colorado is when you put your hand in your pocket, you realize that Polis has been there first.
Or you're holding hands with Polis, yeah.
Exactly. So, hey, wanted to mention this morning we are going to do an interview with Major General John Ron for our America's Veterans Story show. And we've interviewed him before, but he turns 100 this year, or within that next 5 months. So I guess it's going to be in 2022. He turns 100. And he was at Omaha Beach the first day of D-Day. And he's just a fascinating interview. And I thought, let's do another interview with him because he was there, and I can't wait to do that, Producer Steve.
I'm glad you made that decision, because I read a lot about D-Day, and in my own mind I have a picture, you know, in my imagination, but to actually hear this from a person who actually stood on the beach that day, that you can't beat that.
Oh, it's super powerful. And so that will air this Sunday at 3. And then Charlie, one of our other producers, has done a super job. We have 3 different broadcasts of America's Veteran Stories throughout the weekend. Our latest is always Sunday at 3. But then there's also another veteran story that broadcasts on Saturday at 10 and on Sunday at 10 p.m. So be sure and check that out. Steve, I wanted to get over here to this quote for today. And I thought, since we're talking about budgets, that it would be good to go to Ludwig von Mises. And he was an Austrian school economist, historian, logician, and sociologist. He wrote and lectured extensively on the societal contributions of classical liberalism. And he is best known for his work on praxeology, which is a study of human choice and action. This is what he said. He said, the champions of socialism call themselves progressives, but they recommend a system which is characterized by rigid observance of routine and by a resistance to every kind of improvement. They call themselves liberals, but they are intent upon abolishing liberty. They call themselves Democrats, but they yearn for dictatorship. They call themselves revolutionaries, but they want to make the government omnipotent. They promise the blessings of the Garden of Eden, but they plan to transform the world into a gigantic post office, every man but one a subordinate clerk in a bureau. What do you think of that, Steve?
I think, again, you've hit the nail on the head in terms of a quote from a person, you know, who lived long ago, and yet he nails 2021 living in America right. He just nails it to the wall.
I know. And he was born in 1881. He died in 1973. So I thought that was a great quote. There was just a couple of headlines that I wanted to run through that Patty has pulled off that I thought was important that you needed to know. And the first one, let me get to it here, is I find this absolutely amazing that Pueblo, a school district 60, has found $1,000 a stipend, so an extra $1,000 for each of their employees that has been vaccinated. We always talk about we want to pay our great teachers more, and you hear these school districts all the time say they don't have the money. Now, I think that this came from the federal government. So again, look at the coercion on this. And obviously, the federal government is printing money that they don't have. But then I just find it amazing that we are not making sure that we're paying teachers because they made it through trying to teach our kids through this whole COVID-19 Wuhan China virus reaction disruption. I mean, that seems like you might want to pay people for that. But hey, they found $1,000 for each one of their employees that gets the jab. And then this is also interesting. Penn State employees who refuse the vaccination face re-education. Did you ever think, Steve, that we would be talking about if you don't do something here in America, that you would have to go through some re-education process? I mean, what does that bring to mind? China? Mao? I mean, I just find it absolutely astounding that that is happening in the United States of America in 2021, Steve.
I'm surprised that the public affairs people at Penn State didn't find a better word to use than re-educate. Because you're right, it takes you right back to these other things.
And, I mean, as I mentioned, this didn't just happen overnight. All of this has been being put in place for years and years and years. I really think it started probably back in the 60s. Basically, you know, the radical activists, instead of, you know, long hair and sit-ins, they decided to cut their hair, put on suits, and get involved in education, kind of took over our educational facilities. And we can see this indoctrination that is of just such great concern. And so the veil is really off on what has occurred on this. And I wanted to just mention, hopefully I've got this other one. And that is, there is a big donor. I don't have it right here in front of me. There is big donors that are starting to pull back on funding these different universities and colleges. And that is really important. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that, hey, taking our money, indoctrinating our kids to hate what we're doing is really not a good idea. And it's taken us a while to figure out what's going on, but the veil is off on that, Steve.
Well, both of these stories, in terms of there's just the oddity of what they're trying to say, the picture they try to put out there of how they conduct themselves, and these stories paint a different picture.
Right. Okay. I found this. This was by Fox Business. It says the alumni withhold donations, demand colleges enforce free speech. It says Carl Nuss also helped start Cornell Free Speech Alliance to defend free speech on campus. Apparently, Cornell reached out, wanted a check. He normally has given a check, But he wanted to talk to some of the conservative professors. When he did, he found out that they are terrified to actually say what is going on. And he said, you know what, I think we'll do something different. So good for him. We're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of my great sponsors. They have five locations: Lone Tree, Westminster, Aurora, Colorado Springs, and Loveland. And they have football specials that are for dine-in. They have dine-in specials, they have to-go specials, and then a party pack. If you're having people come over to watch Monday night or Thursday night football, it's certainly great to get that party pack. So check out my sponsors list on my website. We're going to go to break, and we'll be right back.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. We are an independent voice. We search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to do that. On the line with me is Sean Spicer. You know him. He is a Newsmax host and former White House press secretary in the Trump administration. He has a new book out. It's Radical Nation: Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's Dangerous Plan for America. Sean Spicer, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kim. Thanks for having me.
It's so interesting. The Washington Post has been publishing false stories about the Russia hoax for 5 years or so. And recently, you noted that you tweeted it out, that they've removed major portions and made a number of corrections to two big stories about the Steele dossier. What's going on with that, Sean?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, in Radical Nation, this new book that I have out, I talk about my experience with the Steele dossier. Just to back people up, on January 10th, 2017, I took the phone call at the Trump campaign from Jake Tapper, then from BuzzFeed, saying that they were running with this Steele dossier. And the reality is, from the jump, I said, okay, this isn't true. One, Tapper started off by talking about how the briefing went down with Comey, and Comey had given him this two-page dossier. I said that was false. I was actually in the room with the president-elect when he got the briefing, because I haven't maintained a security clearance. So I was there. I witnessed what happened. There was nothing handed to the president. He wasn't ready at the time. And Tapper, of course, said, well, you know, my sources say different. Ironically, both Comey and Clapper backed up my version of it afterwards, and CNN hasn't done anything to update their stories. Second, once we were able to actually read what was in the dossier, we had to have Mike Pompeo, the incoming CIA director, get a copy of it and call us from a secure location. And one of the allegations was that Michael Cohen, then the president's attorney, had been to Prague and at a specific time and place. And so I called Michael Cohen personally and said, I need you to come back to Trump Tower, bring your passport. He literally thought it was one of the oddest things. He's like, are you serious? And I said, yes. He said, I'm a half hour away. I said, I don't care. I need to see this in person. So he drives back. I open his passport. I start thumbing through it. He's never been to Prague, at least in the current passport. And he definitely hadn't been anywhere out of the country during the time period, never mind to Prague, which was alleged in the dossier. And I started telling these reporters, okay, I can demonstrably prove that this is not true. And they were like, yeah, well, we're not saying it's true. We're just saying that there are allegations. And I was like, I mean, if that's journalism today, I can say there are allegations, then that tells you where we are. But it was clearly an attempt just to get Trump. And it ended up obviously overshadowing 4 years of his administration. The interesting thing about it is that I have two chapters in the book about how opposite things are now. You have a complicit media that covers up everything from the Hunter Biden laptop to any allegations or double standards, hypocrisy that the president now commits. So it's funny. I mean, we went from allegations stand to we're going to cover up everything.
Sean, how did we get to this point in America?
Well, I think part of it was Trump came into office willing to fight back against what he calls the swamp and the deep state. And nobody had really ever done that before. I mean, there was this idea that, okay, I'm going to get along. I'm going to suck up to the press corps and to major donors and all this. And I think Trump sort of was like, that's not how I'm going to do this. And he rocked the boat. And that's the thing, is that Biden brought back the swamp and filled it up. That's that, you know, all of these people that have been around forever. And I think that's the reality of what's happening, is that, you know, when you upset the apple cart, somebody's going to get pissed. And that's what happened.
Well, and it has been really remarkable at the American people to watch this whole thing. And then we get into the election, and the night of the election, I found it really astounding that, you know, the counting stopped and how that whole thing came down. What's your thoughts on that, Sean?
On the election?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I sort of look at states like Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Nevada. And if you realize that what happened was the Democrats used a pandemic. A pandemic, by the way, that Anthony Fauci, who is science, according to him, said right. That we should vote in person if we did it safely, to implement things that their own folks, i.e. Jimmy Carter, said were subject to fraud, i.e. mail-in voting. So they used this pandemic to change laws and to change regulations that they had no authority to do that. So what I mean is that state legislatures are supposed to do this, and yet you had clerks, secretaries of state. I mean, in Georgia, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger literally entered into a consent decree with Stacey Abrams to mail every single person a ballot, regardless of whether they asked for it or not, or whether they confirmed they lived at the address that they did. Why? And those are the kind of things that suddenly, and the Democrats knew that they advantaged them. Why in Wisconsin did they only allow people to, quote, what they call cure their ballot, which means I realize upon accepting your ballot at the county clerk's office or wherever, the town clerk, that your ballot has a mistake on it, meaning that the envelope is not sealed properly, the signature is not on there. And they only called people in Biden counties to tell them, hey, you can come in and fix that. No one seems to want to talk about those issues, and I think those are hugely to blame for what happened.
Well, it is astounding, although a couple of listeners sent something over yesterday about phantom voters, and that is that people that haven't voted, that they personally haven't voted, but actually somebody voted for them. But that's kind of a whole nother thing. I know we're somewhat limited on time.
It's also, not only is it a whole nother thing, but look, here's the thing. I have an expression that people around me have heard for years, which is like, you have to spank a dog or I shouldn't say spank, that's not appropriate, but, you know, punish a dog at when it commits a problem. So you can't go and punish a dog 2 weeks later. My point in that is to say, if there's a phantom voter, if there's somebody that's presenting illegal or inappropriate credentials to try to vote, you need to call them out at the time, and it needs to be documented. Well, people coming back 3 or 4 months later, it doesn't work, because you can't, once that ballot is put into the mix. So if you take one ballot and put it into 300 or 3,000 or 30,000, you can't go find it. So if people don't call out, you know, illegal activities or alleged illegal activities at the time, it's not, you can't, it's almost like the bell has been rung. Unfortunately, I'm not saying that's not a problem. It's just, but the other points that I'm making are things that we can systemically ensure through law don't happen again.
Well, and I think that's what's really important. I know that there's an organization out here in Colorado working really hard to verify if people voted, and they've found that there's been multiple people living in a 800 square foot apartment, and again, this is long ball, Sean. I mentioned it in the first segment. The radical activist left has been playing long ball, and these things didn't just happen overnight.
No, and that's exactly, I'm glad you said that. Because so much of this stuff is like, oh, well, the pandemic. And you are absolutely right, Kim. This is stuff that they were like, wait, they would go, oh, my gosh, hold on, there's a pandemic. Let's do all the stuff that we've been talking about for years and decades. Mm-hmm. So that's what people need to get through. Is that this was this ridiculous excuse on the left that, you know, well, it was a pandemic. And it's like, well, wait a second. We've had other issues come up, not just, you know, nationally, but in various states, natural disasters and other things. And we've still been able to continue to vote. And yet somehow, even with the safety precautions that were put in place, that wasn't supposed to happen. The Democrats knew what would happen if they got their way. You got to give them credit for the fact that they were smart enough to use it and we weren't smart enough to see it.
Well, yes, because we don't typically think like Democrats. My guest tomorrow grew up in a Marxist Democrat family, and so we're going to talk about the whole Rittenhouse case on that. Sean, I know we're getting really limited on time, but also in your book, you're talking about Kamala Harris's, and that book is Radical Nation, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's Dangerous Plan for America. And it seems like whenever Kamala Harris is asked a real question, all she does is laugh. What's your thoughts about her performance as vice president?
I actually was going to laugh because of your question, but you're right. There's a chapter in the book called Kamala Harris, President in Waiting. And the thing that people have to understand about Kamala Harris, and I document it very extensively, is that, you know, she was not chosen because she was the most experienced or qualified. Biden made it very clear. He was choosing her because she was a woman of color and he wanted credit for choosing the first woman of color. And once you understand that, you get it. She was not chosen to be the best. And she spent 4 years in the United States Senate. Think about this. Think about Biden to Obama, Gore to Clinton, Cheney to Bush. These were all people who brought a level of experience to the job that could advise the president, the commander in chief. What is she telling Biden? She's been around for 4 years in the Senate. She doesn't know anybody. She doesn't have any relations. She was running for president half the time she was in the Senate. So she doesn't have the experience in the relationships that a normal vice president would have. Even Pence had been a governor. He had been in House leadership in the U.S. House. He knew people. He had been around the block. He had ties to outside groups and could play that role. She doesn't. And that's the thing that people, you know, when you look and you go, okay, it's a 28% approval rating. But, Tim, lastly, this goes to the point, a point that I make over and over in the book, whether it's Vice President Harris or Pete Buttigieg, the wrong people were chosen because Biden is focused on legacy. And he wants to be able to say, I appointed this person who is the first at this, the first at that, not the most qualified. And if we get ready to go to the holidays and you're going to have those arguments with your family members, the cool thing about Radical Nation is it lays out systematically and very logically the arguments to deconstruct both the people and the policies in this administration.
Well, that sounds like something that would be good to prepare for the holidays, because I really find that being informed and understanding these issues, then you're able to be much calmer as you're having these important discussions. So that book is Radical Nation, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's Dangerous Plan for America, and recommend people get that in preparation for conversations that they will have at Christmas parties and also at celebrations as well. Sean Spicer, thank you so much for joining us, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Kim. I appreciate it. Have a great holiday season if I don't talk to you again, but I'd love to get back on with you sometime soon.
That would be awesome. Thanks so much, Sean Spicer. Okay, and we're going to jump over here to Karen Levine. You know her. She is one of our great partners of both the shows. I had teasingly said that she was our oldest partner, but she's not. She's really the longest partner, been a great supporter of our show, and she is an award-winning realtor with RE/MAX Alliance. Karen Levine, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim.
What is going on in the housing market right now here in the metro area? I'm seeing some more for sale signs.
Well, it is the fourth quarter, and that is when things kind of quiet down a little bit because people are focused on the holidays and getting together with family and friends and not necessarily making a housing move. So inventory continues to be low. We're not seeing an increase in inventory, but homes are staying on the market a couple of days longer just because, you know, there are less people in a position of necessity to get into housing. There's some great opportunities for buyers who maybe have missed out in the spring selling season or over the summer, that because the competition might be a little bit less, they may be able to get their foot in the door.
Well, and I think that there is opportunity, and Patty had pulled an article. This was from the Denver Business Journal. It said 1/4 of Denver homebuyers want to relocate out of the metro area. Now, it says that they want to go to Chicago. Go figure on that. I can't believe moving to Illinois is a great idea with their tax structure there. But with that, there's got to be opportunity for buying a home. And Karen, as we're looking at all of this inflation that is occurring, we had Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group on yesterday. He's a mortgage specialist. If you can get yourself into a home and get one of these low rates locked in, that is at least a little bit of a hedge against inflation, because rents seem to be rising. And it seems like a really good idea to make that play. And then, of course, you have your home as well. You've got your backyard. You have your own park right outside, instead of back in the COVID-19 Wuhan China virus, where they closed down parks. So I think homeownership is so important.
It is, and I think, you know, Lauren's advice is right on with regards to the only way typically to fight inflation is to raise interest rates. So that's probably inevitable, because we're seeing double-digit inflation at this point. And so, you know, the Fed has done some interesting things, so we're never quite sure what their next plan is, but they're going to ultimately have to start to raise some of those, you know, raise those rates. So if you can get into a property here at 3%, maybe slightly under, maybe slightly over, but 3% is a phenomenal interest rate. As we have said on my team, the DeVito Dreammakers, it may not be the perfect house, but you now have home ownership, you have your foot in the door, and then you can use that to leverage down the road, whether that's to make them...
Go ahead, Karen.
Yeah. Just to be able, you know, to use that asset to better your financial position, and it still creates it still offers you shelter, you know, that you are going to own eventually.
Well, I love that. And so, Karen Levine, whether or not people are going to sell their home, they're buying a new home, they really should give you a call. And also on these new bills, it's great to have you on the home buyer side of the table as well, because there's all kinds of different data points that need to be covered, and it's important to have somebody on your side of the table. Karen Levine, how can people reach you?
People can reach me at 303-877-7516.
Again, that's 303-877-7516. And Karen, one other thing. I don't know if you heard the very beginning of the show, but for America's Veteran Stories this Sunday, we are going to do another interview with Major General John Ron. He turns 100 in 2022, and he was at Omaha Beach first day of D-Day. And you're a sponsor of that show as well, and I know that you just love that.
Oh, definitely. We'll have to tune in and hear what General Ron has to say.
So you'll just love it. So Karen Levine, you have a great day. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Kim.
Okay, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we want to start to take a look at Polis's proposed budget. And we're going to do that with Ben Murray. He is the fiscal policy analyst with the Independence Institute, and he's really delving into this, and we need to know what's going on that. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
America's Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, Sunday afternoons at 3. Here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And this show comes to you because we are an independent voice. We have great sponsors that we work with. Another one of them is the Kirsch Insurance Group. They are specialists in this Medicare arena. And this open enrollment time, where you're able to make changes for your 2022 Medicare plan, is coming to a close very soon. December 7th is that date. I find it goofy that the government says you can only make changes to your next year's plan through a certain time, but you better check it out because I'm learning that the different plans can, or different companies can make different decisions regarding what will be covered and the cost. And you don't want to have a surprise when you get into 2022. And Kirsch Insurance Group works with a bunch of different carriers. And so they can help you find the plan that is best for you. So reach out to them at their website. It's iKirsch, iKirsch.com, iKirsch.com, and get that done because December 7th is right around the corner. On the line with me is Ben Murray. He is the fiscal policy analyst with the Independence Institute. He's a real numbers guy, and he can go through all this and help us understand that. Ben Murray, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. And Polis's budget, he's proposed this. Is this right for the next fiscal year?
Yeah, that's right. So last month, he released his budget proposal. Now, this isn't actually what will pass into the budget. The legislature will meet starting next year, and then they'll come up with a budget in the spring. But this is sort of his roadmap of what he'd like to see.
And as you look at it, what's your comments on it, Ben?
Well, you know, the first thing to note is it's the biggest budget, and it would be the biggest budget in Colorado history. He's requesting $40 billion. Now that's probably just a random number to most listeners. It would have been to me if I weren't a budget analyst. let me give you some numbers to kind of help put that in perspective. So number one is the budget request amount is about 3.5 billion more than last year, right? So the way the budget works is, you have about 40, you know, this in Polis's budget, you have $40 billion request for the overall state budget. Something around, you know, 12, 13, 14 billion a year is for the general fund, right? And it fluctuates year to year on a formula. It's population growth plus inflation. It increases by population growth plus inflation. So for the general operating budget, you know, the general fund, he's requesting a $1 billion increase or an 8% increase.
Wow.
Ben,
just a quick note. What he did through the reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan, China virus is he basically, through his agencies, closed down businesses, decided who was essential, who wasn't essential. We saw a number of everyday hardworking people close their businesses with this. So their income has gone down significantly, but yet he is proposing an 8% increase in the general fund. Where is he getting the money for this?
Well, so a number of things. Number one is state revenues have been very, very good. We expected, or I should say the legislature expected, revenues to really just fall by a large amount in fiscal year, you know, 2020 and 2021, right? So there's fiscal year 19 to 20. The fiscal year for Colorado goes sort of from July 1st through the middle of the next year. So it's a mid-year fiscal year. And they expected it to really fall. And the budget was actually only $30 billion during the pandemic for that fiscal year. It turned out that a lot more revenue came in than they expected. In fact, revenues ended up exceeding their pre-pandemic expectations, right? So before we ever knew there was going to be a pandemic or a virus, we had the state projected how much money they expected they would get right now during this time. Right. And then the pandemic hit and they revised their expectations downward. They said, oh, my gosh, this is going to this economy has plummeted. We're going to do terribly on revenues. We're not going to have any enough money to spend as a state. And you heard progressives in the state wailing about all the money we don't have and how education's going to fail and we're not going to have any money to fund essential services. And fast forward to today, budget, actual budget receipts as well as expectations are higher than they were before we even knew there was a pandemic. So that's number one. But on top of these, much higher than expected budget forecasts, or I should say revenue forecasts, the federal government airlifted billions of dollars into Colorado, and a lot of people would say, oh, well, we should go spend that money on all kinds of stuff, whatever we can find to spend it on before it expires, which we, frankly, we should. But we should also not forget, what I mean is we should use that money wisely. We shouldn't just return to the federal government. I think it needs to be used wisely since the federal government's chosen to do that. I would prefer that the federal government hadn't done that because, a lot of the inflation we're seeing that all of us are paying for, you were talking about it with your last guest. Now, that's because of those trillions of dollars that the federal government printed to do things like that, to send billions to Colorado. So a lot of Polis's budget is spending a big chunk of that federal money. I would say those are the two big buckets for why we have so much.
So a lot of this money then came from the federal government, but not all states received. I've got to guess that like a red state, like a Florida, probably didn't receive as much from the federal government. Is that true or not?
Well, no. Larger states are going to receive more. So Florida, I haven't looked at, just all the state by state numbers. So the big bill that we're now spending money off of is ARPA. It's the one that Democrats passed unilaterally without a single Republican vote. When they took office at the beginning of 2021. And, states much larger than Colorado, like Florida, would have received, I can almost guarantee you, received more money. But I think it's largely true that if you look at the priorities in ARPA, the supposed American Rescue Plan Act, you see a lot of, Democrats at the national level paying off the special interests that got them elected. And I think that's a shame. But, looking at it from a state budget perspective, we do have billions of dollars extra now to spend that Polis is proposing how we spend them in this budget. Now, we're not spending all of the ARPA money in this. We wouldn't be spending all of the ARPA money in this particular fiscal year. We have several fiscal years to spend it. But it looks like just shy of $1 billion would come out of ARPA money for this budget out of the $40 billion.
Okay, so the revenues on these revenues have not grown because there's been a great fiscal policy in Colorado. These revenues have not grown because government is limited. Well, we have somewhat of a limited government with Tabor, with the Colorado's Taxpayers Bill of Rights, although we see, both Democrats and Republicans continue to take shots at that. But the revenues have not grown because we have a robust economy going on and people are thriving and prospering. Am I correct in that or not? The revenues have grown significantly because of the money from the federal government.
Kim, the question you're asking is probably more complex than that. Because there's more going on, right? The federal government has spent trillions of dollars. I mean, more going on than what the state has control of, right? The federal government has spent trillions of dollars that we don't have, bailing out our economy, bailing out asset markets, bailing out, making sure that the economy didn't crater because of the permanently crater because of the pandemic. And if you look at asset prices, if you look at the S&P 500, if you look at housing prices, they were successful, right? They injected liquidity into the market, and it's caused the value of everything to go way up, including, the cost of the gas pump, the cost of the grocery store. I mean, look, it's more complicated than that. There are supply chain issues and different things. But, a lot of the inflation we're seeing across the economy is also because of money printing from the federal government.
Absolutely.
That's going to give the appearance of wealth. So most people at home, if they're looking at their 401k, if they're looking at the price of their home, they're going, wow, look how wealthy I am all of a sudden. You know, wow, my household economy is doing great. If you look at the economy on paper, the numbers look pretty good in a lot of ways, right? Now, unemployment stayed high in Colorado. A lot of people have dropped out of the workforce. But, you know, on paper, the Fed and Congress, by injecting all this liquidity into the economy, have done a pretty good job of making things look good on paper. I think that's also a lot of the reason why government revenues are up here in Colorado. Now, this is a different question. I don't want to get too far into it, but I think there's a serious question as to, is that real wealth creation, or did we just create more paper, right? It's hard for me to imagine when the federal government spends trillions of dollars for people not to work. It's hard for me to believe that those trillions of dollars are going to equate over the long term into increased productivity and increased wealth.
That is a golden nugget of wisdom there, I think, on that, Ben Murray. Let's go to break. I'm talking with Ben Murray. He is the fiscal policy analyst with the Independence Institute. Polis has presented a $40 billion budget. And we're talking about what that is, where these revenues have come from. Before we go to break, though, another great sponsor of the show is Castlegate Knife and Tool. And check out their website. That's castlegate.com. Great place to do your shopping for those on your holiday shopping list, whether or not they're a chef or a collector or a sportsman. But be sure and check them out. It'd be great with this wonderful weather to go to their main location, which is in Sedalia. And they have just opened a pop-up store in the Castle Rock Mercantile as well. So go out there, get your shopping done early so that you can just really enjoy this whole Advent Christmas season. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with Ben Murray, who is the fiscal policy analyst at the Independence Institute, regarding Polis's $40 billion proposed budget. We'll be right back.
Life is more than what we have in the bank. Mary Alpers and Steve Kruse with Three Points Financial understand that comprehensive financial planning is an important component for each individual to thrive and prosper. Three Points Financial provides tax, investment, and retirement planning so that you can achieve your financial independence. With so much public policy uncertainty, it is important to have the professionals at Three Points Financial working for you to navigate those uncharted waters. Check out ThreePointsFinancial.com to schedule your initial consultation to achieve your financial freedom. That's ThreePointsFinancial.com.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. We are an independent voice. We search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. On the line with me is Ben Murray. He is the fiscal policy analyst at the Independence Institute. And we're talking about Polis's proposed $40 billion budget. Ben Murray, what does Polis want to spend all this money on? My researcher had found a really important headline. We talked a little bit about it the other day, but he actually has been getting money over to his cronies through no-bid contracts. He didn't pay any personal income tax for 3 years. What does he think he's going to spend all this money on? I've got to think that it's probably money will be going to a number of his cronies in this whole thing. Is that something you've had a chance to take a look at?
Yeah, so you're right. The Denver Gazette did a great job breaking that story that you're talking about, and that's a great outlet, the Denver Gazette. I recommend your listeners take a look at it. But you know, the Polis budget doesn't exactly say, hey, we're going to spend X, you know, X number of dollars on handouts to my cronies. He believe it or not, he doesn't spell that out in his budget in that way. I wish he did. It would make government a lot more transparent. But, you know, let me give you some highlights. Let me give you some highlights of what he does. I mean, look, it's a long budget. The legislature is going to end up doing something different anyways. But I've sort of poured through it, and I found $424 million on air quality improvement, which sounds great. But let's take a look at some of what that means, right? So of that $424 million, $255 million is for transportation. Now, what exactly? $150 million for electric school buses, $12 million for electric bike rebates, $15 million for incentives for low-emission trucks. Now, they don't say exactly, but his budget doesn't say exactly what that means, but it sounds to me like some kind of a cash for clunkers, turn in your old trucks, and, you know, we'll give a subsidy or a tax break or something to buy a low-emissions truck. And get this one. $28 million to make transit free during peak ozone season from May, end of May through end of August, right? So we're going to give people free rides on the already failing RTD, you know, to supposedly help reduce pollution. You know, I wonder if that's not just to bail out his buddies at the failing RTD.
RTD, because people don't want to ride mass transit. People that want to ride mass transit are, we've talked about it, that the really people on the lower spectrum of income, ideally having their own vehicle to be able to go to a job of their choice. Think about that, that mom out there that she doesn't want to just be constricted to a job that's along the light rail line or the bus lines. She actually, you know, would like to have the freedom to move around. And there's this continued assault on our freedom of movement. I wanted to make a point on this then. I find that interesting. Air quality improvement, but they're not doing anything at all to manage our forests. When I went up to Grand Lake for U.S. Constitution Week in September, you could see a bunch of dead trees up there, and they're not doing anything to get rid of that or to get rid of the underbrush. And think about what our air looked like, Ben Murray, from all of these fires that environmentalists have not let us manage our forests, and people couldn't go outside because of those forest fires. But this isn't, I don't think, about air quality. This is about control.
Yeah, you know, and that's a topic that I don't want to get too much into because I'm a policy analyst and not a natural resources analyst, but I agree with what you're saying. I think it's absolutely right. I actually did work on natural resource issues when I worked for the U.S. Senate as a policy analyst there, and I think it's true that the government, state and federal, take so much land into their domain that they are supposed to manage, and then they don't manage it. And that's a big part of the reason why we have these forest fires. I think we would see a lot less of that if we had more private property ownership in some of these areas.
Right, because private property owners don't want to see their land burn. But my point is they talk about air quality, and you see all of this money here. But what it really is trying to move people to electric vehicles. And the other component of that is it makes us more dependent on China, because China really has a lot of control on the rare earth minerals that are not being mined in the United States. And so, again, I think that this is taking control of how we move about, but also giving control to China. Now, I know that you're on the fiscal side, and here I'm over here kind of talking about the policy on all that. We've got just about 3 minutes left, Ben. How do you want to button this up? You'd said that you wanted to talk about taxation, revenue, spending, excess revenue. What's kind of the final things that you'd like our listeners to hear this morning?
You know, I think the big takeaway here is that government revenues are really ballooning here in Colorado. We have abundance right now at the state level as far as revenues go. You know, that's great. I'm glad revenues are up. But we've been hearing for years and years and years from Colorado Democrats, from progressives in the state, that there's not enough money. Our education system's going to fail, blah, blah, blah. And
well, I do think our education system is failing. Yes.
Well, but they say it's going to fail for lack of funding, which I don't think is the case. It's maybe for other reasons, right?
A note on that, Ben, we mentioned it in the first segment that Pueblo District 60 is giving $1,000 stipend to all of their employees who get the jab. But yet, and I'm sure that probably came from the federal government, I would imagine, or the state government. But here we talk about all the time, we want to get more money to our great teachers, and they say they can't do it. And here they're giving $1,000 out. It's just crazy what's going on there.
Kim, there's so much we could go into. But, you know, the big picture here is I often hear this quip from progressives here that, conservatives, Tabor is the same as just drowning the state budget in a bathtub, or they say something like that. Let me tell you, the state budget is not drowning in any bathtub, right? Independence Institute, where I work, you can go to i2i.org and check us out. We're putting another tax cut on the ballot through our issue committee, to cut the income tax from 4.55% to 4.4%. Now, remember, we cut it last year, too, so next year you're going to see another tax cut on the ballot. And when we do that, progressives are going to scream that, we don't have the money, and, you're bleeding us dry. Remember that. And remember this $40 billion budget. When you go to see that tax cut on your ballot, and when you hear legislators and the governor and the governor's been supportive of tax cuts, but when you hear progressives complaining that we don't have the money, remember the size of this budget. And let me leave you with this with this piece that I think will help put it in perspective.
I just need to make a quick note on that. Polis says that he's for tax decreases, but yet you see all of these increases in fees, and it's more difficult, I think, to fight these fees than it is to fight these taxes. And so he's very smart politically. It's a sleight of hand, I think. But what's the final thought you want to leave with us on that, Ben Murray?
So since we're talking about in the spirit of talking about the budget, he's proposing a $40 billion budget for fiscal year 22-23. Go back to fiscal year 12-13, 10 years prior. The state budget was only $20 billion. Now, let me ask you, do you think incomes in this state, family incomes, have gone up by double in 10 years? Have family incomes doubled in the last 10 years in this state? I don't think so. But yet the budget here is doubling in just 10 years. Now, somebody might argue, population has increased, so the budget needs to increase. Okay, over the last 10-year period, from the 2010 census to the 2020 census, the state population has grown by 15%.
But yet
our budget has doubled.
Wow. Ben Murray, we are out of time, but that is a nugget that people need to be thinking about. Population is up 15% during that time frame, and Polis, we've doubled revenues on that. So, my friends, our quote for today is, government is the only institution that can take a valuable commodity like paper and make it worthless by applying ink, and that's from Ludwig von Mises. So, my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.